Our next presentation is by Daniel Ferreira, and the title is The Effects of pH and Ion Exchange on Cesium Absorption in Vermiculite Interlayers.
Hi. So, my grad student and I are interested in cesium on vermiculite due to the contamination of soils in Fukushima Prefecture in Japan from the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant meltdown. So when the power plant melted down in 2011, it ejected particulates into the atmosphere that contained radiocesium, and then those particulates settled out into the surface and deposited across a large area in Japan. The map here, you can see that the largest area, the brown area, is very low concentration. The main concern in Japan with radiocesium is this small area right here that's yellow and red, and this is kind of just within about 30 kilometers or so of the nuclear power plant. So the radiation levels in that area, this was a portable dosimeter reading that I took in 2016, just outside the exclusion zone. It's a little hard to see. It's 4.4 microsieverts per hour, so well above the allowable regulatory limit. And so there's a lot of research going on to try and figure out how to remove this radiocesium from the soil. So we're working in a village called Iatate Village, which is just outside the exclusion zone, about 30 kilometers northwest of the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant. They have seen very high levels of contamination. Essentially, this is where the mountain pass exists and carried those particulates away from the power plant. And the soils in this area were impacted by deposition of these particles containing both cesium-134 and cesium-137. It's about a 10% to 90% ratio. So the main concern is cesium-137. But obviously, our research that we're doing in the lab, we're working with the stable isotope, cesium-133, but chemically should be, you know, pretty much identical. So the government's solution to the contamination issues in this part of Japan was to remove the topsoil. So because the cesium bound very tightly to the vermiculite minerals in this soil, it stayed very shallow. The vast majority of the cesium stayed within the top 5 centimeters of the soil. And so the government basically just came in with bulldozers. They scraped off the topsoil. They put it in bags, and then they made big piles of these bags of radioactive topsoil. Now the problem is they've removed the topsoil, and so they've decreased radiation in the areas where people are living and working, but there is no permanent solution as to what to do with these piles of radioactive topsoil. So essentially the government just threw a tarp on top of these piles of radioactive soil until they can figure out what to do with it. So at this point in our research, we are trying to kind of better understand the binding mechanism between cesium and vermiculite. So we know that cesium becomes irreversibly adsorbed to vermiculite, which is why it's so hard to get it out of the soil. And we are basically trying to fill in some gaps in the literature. Most of the studies of cesium have focused on cesium contamination of groundwater because cesium is usually very soluble. So we're trying to kind of better understand some of the fundamental science behind how cesium interacts with vermiculite. So our first step towards this was to generate an adsorption envelope, and we found a few interesting points when we studied the adsorption envelope. As you can see, we had a fairly wide range of pHs, so because we're trying to understand the mechanism, we felt comfortable kind of expanding beyond natural pH ranges in order to better understand the behavior of the ion. So the first thing that we noticed is that the initial adsorption edge here, going up from pH 1, centered around pH 2, which is a very, very low pH to see an adsorption edge. And what this indicates is that the binding, the affinity of these sites for cesium is extremely strong. The other interesting piece of information is that if you look at the quantity of cesium adsorbing, the decrease from pH, about pH 8, which is where this adsorption plateau here at the end is centered around pH 8, and you come down to pH 1, the amount of cesium adsorbing only decreased by about a third. So we're increasing the hydrogen concentration by 8 orders of magnitude, and we really only decreased the amount of cesium adsorbing by about 35%, which is really, really surprising to still see that much cesium adsorbing at such a low pH. And that, again, indicates that the binding mechanism of the cesium to the adsorption sites in the vermiculite is extremely strong. So in order to get a little bit more information about how the interaction between the cesium and the vermiculite affected the structure of the vermiculite, we decided to do an X-ray diffraction study. And obviously, there's quite a bit in the literature about the fact that cesium adsorption on a mineral like vermiculite, very, very similar to the adsorption mechanism of potassium and micas. So the cesium gets inside the interlayer of the vermiculite, it dehydrates, and then collapses the vermiculite interlayer. And what we wanted to do is we wanted to try and quantify just how much of an effect the dehydrating cesium adsorption had on the size of the interlayer. So the X-ray diffraction study, we have here a water-washed vermiculite, so the vermiculite just exposed to deionized water, and then in blue we have the cesium exposed to a solution of 20 millimolar cesium chloride. And both of these were analyzed at ambient humidity, so impact of water concentration in the interlayer should be negligible. So what we can see is that the water-washed vermiculite had a despacing of 13.1 angstroms. The vermiculite layer is about 10 angstroms, so we can conclude that the interlayer spacing is about 3 angstroms in the water-washed vermiculite with native cations adsorbed, mostly hydrogen. When we expose that cesium, that vermiculite to cesium, we see that the despacing drops to 11 angstroms. So what this is telling us is that the exposure of the vermiculite to cesium caused the interlayer to decrease from about 3.1 angstroms to about 1 angstrom, which is a very, very small interlayer spacing. So essentially this reinforces the idea and kind of, again, quantifies the amount of the collapse. So when you look at the size of the interlayer spacing compared to the diameter of the cesium atom, which is very, very large, it's very easy to see why we call that cesium non-exchangeable. There's no way that you're going to get that cesium ion back out of an interlayer that has collapsed to this degree. The last piece of this puzzle for us in terms of trying to kind of better understand the relationship between the cesium and the vermiculite was to do a kinetic study. I had hoped to have more than 3 data points to present to you guys, but instrumental availability kind of squashed my hopes of being able to have more data on this front. So I'll just stress that this is preliminary, and we're hopeful that the rest of the data will be collected soon and confirm the conclusions that we're seeing from this preliminary data. So when we started off planning out the kinetic study, basically what we were trying to determine is how long does it take for the inner layer to collapse? So once we expose the vermiculite to the cesium, how long does it take for the cesium to collapse the interlayer, or in this case, potassium? So what we found is that the competition between potassium and cesium strongly favored cesium. And so regardless of the time interval, if we added cesium first, it adsorbed so strongly to the adsorption sites, potassium could not compete with cesium whatsoever. So we decided to flip it and go the other way. We added potassium first and said, let's see how long does it take for potassium, which should have a similar mechanism in terms of collapsing the interlayer, to collapse that vermiculite interlayer and basically prevent cesium adsorption. We started off under the assumption that this was going to be on the order of minutes. So we looked at 0 minutes, 5 minutes, and 15 minutes, and much to my dismay, found no difference in cesium adsorption along that time scale. So we decided, well, let's try and stretch the time scale out a little bit. And so we did a second batch of samples at 6 hours, 18 hours, and 24 hours to see what would happen. And we're absolutely shocked to find that even beyond 18 hours, we're still seeing potassium continuing to collapse those interlayers. So if you look at the amount of cesium adsorbed at 18 hours, we see a dramatic drop between the amount of cesium that's able to adsorb at 18 hours versus 24 hours. So basically, we added the potassium, let it sit, let it percolate, do its thing for 18 hours, and then added the cesium. We did another batch where we let the potassium sit for 24 hours. We shouldn't see any difference, because you would hope that whatever interlayer collapse is going to take place would have already done so by 18 hours on the mixer. And no, much to our surprise, we found that those interlayers are still collapsing even out to 24 hours. So we have no idea at this point where this graph is going to end. We have prepared samples out to as far as 48 hours, and just have not been able to analyze them yet. The paper based on this data is hopefully going to be part of the Journal of Environmental Quality special issue on soil chemistry and societal challenges. So hopefully, if you're curious to see how this turns out, you can check out that issue. So where we're at, we're hoping to complete the kinetic study hopefully in the next month or two. We will find the end of that curve and figure out when that interlayer actually completes the collapse. And then we are also working on a corollary study where we're looking at the adsorption or the removal of cesium from these vermiculite interlayers based on a method that was developed at the University of Tsukuba using magnesium nitrate and an organic ligand, which basically they found that magnesium was able to squeeze into those interlayers and remove cesium, but the cesium would just exchange it back out unless you had something waiting to grab that cesium and remove it from solution. And they were able to find this organic ligand that apparently complexes with cesium, creates an insoluble precipitate, and removes it from the equation. So we're hopeful to complete that work by middle of next year and hopefully show that there actually is a way to chemically extract the cesium from these vermiculite interlayers. So we're doing this research to try and help the people of Ietate Village. We want to try and find a way to deal with this radioactive soil, and our hope is that by improving our understanding of the interaction between cesium and vermiculite interlayers, we can help develop a remediation strategy. And with that, if I have a minute or so, I will be glad to take any questions.
I think we have time for a question.
Sabina.
Well, when I have worked with clay, always kind of used pH 4 as the cutoff of where I start dissolving more and more aluminum that interferes with the things I want to study. And I was just curious, I mean, a lot of people don't measure aluminum because it's inconvenient to measure, but, you know, you can also do stability calculations
assuming
a perfect kaolinite. So I would encourage you to look at that.
Right. So we didn't do aluminum. We did measure silicon in our low pH samples and found no soluble silicon. So that was kind of our, you know, indication that there's no mineral dissolution taking place. But that's also why we didn't want to push it beyond pH 1. So we wanted to look for the bottom of that adsorption envelope, but we figured if we're going below pH 1, then we're really going to start risking dissolution, and that becomes an issue. So we had to stop at pH 1. All right, thank you.
Thank you.